the fees that are involved there. We shouldn't pay for a service that we don't use by including the footprint of our roofs, the actual floating part of our mortgage. It has increased each homeowner a fee of $26 a month. It doesn't sound like a lot initially, but you add that up for a year and forever, and it makes a difference. Our floating mortgage, I would argue, is not an impervious area.
Very good. Thank you, all three of you. Next three, please.
Are Jim Hillman, George Donnerberg, and Sam Galbraith. And they'll be followed by Ellen Wax, Susan, and Dan Carlson.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. My name's Jim Hillman. I'm a resident of West Haven Island Moorage. And the important issue here, the authority to levy this user charge is conveyed by the Portland City Code, which says, quote, ratepayers who receive a direct or indirect benefit from city stormwater management services are subject to the user charge, end quote. So fundamentally, if you receive a benefit, you pay the charge. That important concept is reinforced by another part of the code, which says a user charge means a charge paid by a ratepayer for the use of stormwater management services. So clearly, the authority to levy a user charge is based solely on the concept that you pay for a service only if you are a beneficiary of that service. All right. Now, here's the problem. The proposed language change in the ordinance eliminates all links between parties who pay for the service and the parties who receive the benefit from the service. It does this by removing the language tying the user charge to the user's proportionate share of stormwater management services. That goes away, and instead, it levies the charge on the amount of impervious surface on a taxpayer's property, regardless of whether runoff from that surface is subject to the city's stormwater management service. The result of this change is that taxpayers who receive no benefit from the stormwater management services are still subject to the user charge. This is a violation of the statutory authority granted to BES and would be an obvious breach of BES's authority to levy a user charge. I've got three other arguments. I just am out of time. I'm going to be unable to make them, but...
Could you give Carly your testimony?
I'll rewrite it and submit it for certain.
We'll read it carefully, sir.
Okay.
Very good. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, thank you for your time. I'm George Donnerberg. I developed and am a resident of McGuire Point Marina. It's the most easterly marina in the city of Portland. I'm here in that capacity. I also am a supervisor for the Multnomah County Drainage District. I'm not here in that capacity and not representing them, but I do understand the concept of citywide benefit. I also applaud the work of BES for what they're doing. I'm here to discuss equity and the way that the stormwater fee is being assessed. I think it's unfair to homeowners, floating homeowners. And as example, if I own a condominium downtown on a 40,000 square foot block and it had 100 units on it, I'd be assessed based on 40,000 square foot divided by 100 units. In my situation, I live and developed a 41 unit floating home marina. We have roughly 41,000 square feet of impervious paved surface, which we pay a stormwater fee on. And now they're asking, in addition to that fee, unlike the condominium, land-based condominium, which you could stack as many units as you want, because we went sideways out in the river, you're asking us to pay a fee on the impervious surface and also for our floating homes, which are out in the river, and I feel that that's basically unfair. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Sam Galbraith. I'm a resident of McAdam Bay. I have been for 24 years. I'm the board. I'm the treasurer. I'm also a member of the River Community Advisory Committee of the Bureau of Development Services, and I'm on the Waterfront Owners of Oregon board. I just want to add a few more points. I hope it's not too redundant. One is that we all have appeals. All of the mortgages have appeals pending before the ARC. And those appeals are from relief for the offsite surcharge that started in August of 2015, based on Vigor's successful appeal, which you've heard about. If passed, this amendment places those appeals in question. We haven't had a clear answer from ARC or its staff as to whether our appeals are going to continue. We ask that the appeals be allowed to proceed on the interpretations applied to the Vigor case, and that whatever the resolution of the definition is, not have any cloud over possible retroactivity to our appeal. So that's a specific request that we allow those appeals to go ahead, get the same kind of relief that Vigor got. Second item, until the summer of 2015, flowing structures were exempt, you've heard this, for the off-site sewer stormwater charges for good reason. Rainwater that falls on them never enters the city stormwater system. The administrative changes without prior notification of affected parties was a means to increase fees while ignoring the quid pro quo requirement of the city code. We have always supported and shared support of the city's stormwater system through our off-site fees. It's the off-site fees that increase by this definition of impermeable unfairly to the houses over the water. If clarification is to be made, it should include an exemption for floating homes and their overwater infrastructure from storm water fees. Thank you.
Thank you, and perfect timing.
All right.
Thank you, gentlemen. Next three, please.
Are Ellen Wax, Susan Carlson, and Don Carlson.
Would you like to go ahead and start, please?
Good afternoon. Ellen Wax with the Working Waterfront Coalition. The coalition opposes this ordinance. The ordinance will codify a new category of structures subject to stormwater fees that target waterfront businesses in our working harbor. Many businesses already pay significant stormwater fees relative to their impact on the city's system, since they occupy large tracts of improved property, which is the basis of fee assessment. This ordinance expands the basis for assessing stormwater fees to a new class of structures that have been excluded since adoption of the code decades ago. The current definition of impervious area used for billing purposes demonstrates there is a distinction between overwater and land-based improvements for purposes of collecting stormwater fees. The recent ARC decision confirms this distinction. It's also important to note that many, if not all, harbor businesses with waterfront infrastructure are making significant investments in stormwater improvements to accomplish source control associated with harbor cleanup and address the industrial stormwater permit. The money spent on these site-specific improvements provides more benefits to stormwater quality than fees paid to BES. If the overall objective is to improve water quality from stormwater runoff, then it is counterproductive to assess more fees on these businesses rather than allow them to use the money to invest in facility-specific priorities. We urge the City Council to reject the ordinance.
Thank you.
Ellen, can I ask you a question? Because you and I usually meet pretty regularly, and we've never actually we haven't in recent times met on this. What was the change in 2013 that you object to? What was the change? What did the council do in 2013 that triggered the Vigor appeal that you feel was misguided?
Can I get back to you on that question?
Let me ask you a follow-up question.
Okay.
What was the change in 2015 that you object to?
Well, it's the adding, well, I guess more specifically, it's right now the adding of the overwater structure.
So the back to the definition of ground.
Right.
And was it your understanding that change in how we measured the surface in 2015 had an impact on homeowners who happen to live in a floating home?
Yes.
And what's the basis of your belief on that? I understand that Vigor has hitched its wagon to this issue, but at some point we're going to have to separate fact from fiction in this hearing and get back to what we are proposing and what we're not. In what way do you understand that the change in how we measure the surface in 2015 impacted homeowners, excuse me, houseboat owners?
I don't think I can answer that question for you right now.
Could you send me something in writing?
Because
I, with all due respect, I think we're beginning to conflate and blur a number of issues. Vigor has a very specific issue. I'm not sure, with all due respect to my friends that are here from the houseboat community, that you actually have the same set of concerns. And I want to make sure that we're separating that out and that we're not piggybacking off of one particular person's claims and that we're looking at them distinctly and separately, because I think the equities are different in both cases, my own view. But I want to make sure we're being clear about impact on homeowners, impact on industrial users.
Okay.
And you could help us with that,
okay,
with just your follow-up written testimony. And thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. My name is Dan Carlson. I'm a disabled veteran. I serve on the Waterfront Organization of Oregon's board, and I'm a floating homeowner. I think to answer Nick's question, with one thing is we had 40 years of not being included, and then in 15 they included us. I think it was illegal, and I think it was against the law, and I think that will be proven in further litigation going forward. As a disabled veteran on a fixed income, another $25 a month is a burden, and $300 a year or $6,000 for the next 10 years, you know, it gets to be, it's in perpetuity also. So it just gets to be a real unfair tax, if you will, on people that are not receiving any benefit. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. It's an honor to have you here.
Thank you for your
Thank
service.
You. Next three, please.
I show the last person signed up is Doug, and I believe the last name is Brown, maybe?
After this
on Bridgeton Road, I think it is.
Just be clear about
Doug.
Next steps and give the council.
Did anybody else want to speak?
Further questions, and we'll have a
Doug.
Last call for anybody who would like to speak. Please come on up.
You're up.
Yeah, is that okay with you?
Yeah.
For a second, first reading.
Do you have a timeline in mind?
My name is Doug Brown. I'm a homeowner on a floating home marina on Bridgeton Road. And this seems like a very simple issue to me. So the definition between impervious and pervious surfaces is what this comes down to. Like you've heard before, in 2015, all of a sudden we started being charged for stormwater runoff treatment that we were not a beneficiary of. The stormwater that runs off the roofs of our floating homes is not treated by your stormwater system. And it just seems to me so patently obvious that there is no reason to be taxed on something for a service that we're not receiving. So that's really what this comes down to.
All right.
That's
Thank
what
you.
I have.
We appreciate it.
Yep.
Thanks for being here. So at this point, we'll call staff back up. That's the end of testimony, right? Great. Staff, come on up.
So, Mayor, can I begin by setting a framework for further discussion and see if it's acceptable to my colleagues?
Yes, sir.
So, first of all, I thought this was a very productive hearing, and I thought that a number of people raised significant questions of law, of regulation, of definition, of common sense, of tax versus fee, and of fairness. So my suggestion is we do the following, as we often do on matters like this, which involve a complex regulatory system, where we want to bring the community along with us and make sure that people are clear about our decision making. Number one, I propose that we continue this hearing, which would have the effect of having a second first reading on this matter, which means the next hearing would also be without a vote, but would be a chance to have feedback to the community from questions that are presented. So that's my first suggestion. My second suggestion is that we direct staff, and we have here staff from the Bureau and from the legal department, to do their best to compile a list of all the questions that were posed to council today and within a reasonable time to post the questions and preliminary answers to those questions on the BES website. I think they should be posted on my website, any other commissioner that chooses to post them, and we would make it accessible to anyone here in the public or who's here or is at home watching on Channel 30 so that you could get the questions and answers. And we'll make sure that the website has all the companion documents cross-referenced so you don't have to spend a lot of time looking for things. Number three, I propose that we come back, Mayor, at a time certain, and I would urge you to consider while we have Carla here that we see if we can pick a time for the purpose of having a second first reading in which we would have a staff presentation, further testimony on any of the issues that are still not resolved to the satisfaction of anyone who's raised them. And by the way, as Commissioner Fritz will often say at these hearings, and I'll say on her behalf, we really do read the emails and testimony we get. And if for some reason we don't have the time, we have smarter people on our staff read them and brief us. So if you've taken the time to put something in writing, please don't feel you have to go home and polish it. Just in whatever form you're comfortable, send it to the council. You can send it to the council clerk, and she'll distribute it. You can send it to any member of council, and they will distribute it. But we would like to have, to the extent possible, your written testimony and any follow-up testimony. Mayor, I think that it would be fair to have at least a two-week interval where people could put further testimony into the record and where staff could prepare a Q&A and update our FAQ. And I would suggest that we find a time 3 or 4 weeks out, if that's acceptable, I mean, if that's reasonable, Jonas, where we come back for a time certain. And the only other thing that is hanging that I think, because Mr. Galbraith raised it, I think we should have a legal opinion on this. Mr. Galbraith said there's other appeals pending, and he doesn't want to see us do anything that has a retroactive effect. Eric, my understanding is that we can only legislate prospectively, and that whatever claims are in the pipeline, whatever issues have been raised, we can't retroactively impact those. Is that correct?
That's correct. In any case, that's not the intent of this legislation.
Right. It's only prospective. So, Mr. Galbraith, I hope that answers your question, and we'd be happy to put that in writing, because it's not our intent to undercut any remedies people have under a prior interpretation of the code. It is our intent to have a robust discussion about whether the code should be updated to reflect the modern realities. So, colleagues, I would offer that as a proposed road forward.
So let me put a few more, little more meat on those bones for discussion purposes. So if we kept the record open, the written record open for 2 more weeks, that would be until January 24th, Wednesday, end of the day, 5 p.m., January 24th. If you wanted to come back the week after that, that would be Wednesday, the 31st of January. And I don't recall that we have 2035 on the agenda that day. I believe we have that on the 18th, is my recollection.
Correct. For the 31st, time certain, are you thinking more than about how much time?
I think we should, just to be safe, because there's a lot of people who have an interest, I think we should carve out an hour to be safe.
Okay. Then it would be 3 o'clock on the 31st.
That works for, I think that works for me and the Bureau Mayor. It depends on whether it works for my colleague.
Colleagues, I know I'm around. It's a Wednesday, correct?
Yes.
Commissioner Udaly?
I'm checking my calendar.
So just to be clear, Commissioner Fish, and it is your intent, you will take written testimony up to the 24th. You will take additional questions from counsel until the 24th. That gives the Bureau a week to compile responses for presentation on the 31st. Is it your intention that we also take testimony on the 31st?
Yeah, I think we would treat it as a second first reading. So we would try to avoid, obviously, redundant testimony. But on the new matters that are raised, we'd want to have feedback from people. In particular, there's a number of lawyers following this, so we're likely to get written submissions. And then if the council at that point feels comfortable moving forward, or at least is comfortable moving to a vote, then we could just put it over the next week in the ordinary course for a second reading.
So I'm available until 4:45 on the 31st, and I also have a couple questions for staff. Mayor?
That works for you, Commissioner Fritz. Commissioner Udaly.
All right. It seems to me that the argument that most of the people that came here to give testimony today are making is that changes in the last couple of years and now these new changes in language in the code have compelled them to pay for services they're not receiving. So the first question is, if disconnecting from our stormwater treatment system is an option for people who own houses that are on actual land, why can't homeowners who are on the water avail themselves of that same program?
Kay, let me take a shot at that.
Sure.
And also talk about the discount program.
Commissioner Udaly, again, I'm Caitlin Lovell with the Bureau for the Science Division, and I'll rely on Jonas to help me here a little bit. But all of the single-family homes can qualify for what we call the Clean River Rewards Program, including the floating homes. So that is available to them, and I believe Jonas has some insight into the floating home communities in particular.
So with relation to Clean River Rewards, which is a program available to all ratepayers who qualify, that refunds up to 100% of the on-site component, which is 35% of that stormwater bill. My understanding is that of the floating home communities, which are in our ratepayer record as multifamily residential, that of those multifamily residential rate accounts, all but two of them are currently participating in the Clean River Rewards program. I believe the two that are not have not applied, and I don't know the detail behind that. We can get more information on that. So my understanding is that all floating home multifamily residential ratepayers are currently receiving the Clean River Rewards discount for the on-site component.
And how do people qualify for that program?
There's an application program, a form online that's filled out, and then we have staff who review. There's a variety of qualification requirements, qualification options. For some, for example, it may be if you have an eco roof. That's not the situation here, but different types of stormwater, either on-site management or characteristics that allow eligibility for that program. And so we have staff who, ratepayer applies, we have staff who review that, and then the discount is applied to the bill.
Okay. And then my second question is about industrial versus residential properties. I certainly understand how silly it may seem to floating homeowners that they're being charged for rainwater that's simply running off their roof and not into our system. However, with industrial customers who have structures over the water, that may not be the case because they're using those structures for activities that may create or add pollutants to the environment. So are we able to distinguish between residential and industrial?
If I understand the question correctly, you're asking related to Clean River Rewards. I mean, as far as the on-site component that's generated.
No, I'm talking in general in the code because it seems obvious to me that there is a difference in the environmental impact of water running off the roof of a home and water running off a dock or a pier that's being used for industrial purposes.
I can probably help. I can answer some of that. Eric Schaffner, City Attorney's Office. There is a difference in the way that the stormwater contamination, if it's there, is viewed, and that's by using permit requirements and benchmarks and those kinds of things. The type of contamination running off of a residential roof generally doesn't rise anywhere near the kind of levels that we're talking about. So in general, residential homeowners, including floating homeowners, including my house, will not have to do anything special to treat the stormwater coming off the roof. They just have to keep it on the property or, in the case of the houseboat owner, sending it into the river. In the case of an industrial discharger, as has been discussed with the case of Vigor this morning or this afternoon, if they're not meeting the state's benchmarks and the city's other permit requirements, they may not qualify for the discount, even if they are managing all the stormwater on site.
Okay. I mean, this is a relatively new issue for me, so I'm you know, if I'm asking questions that don't make sense to you, I apologize. But it seems to me that the concern is, with the change in our language, that both residential and industrial users will be impacted, when our real concern should be, I think, the industrial users, because there is a legitimate environmental impact.
Can I just say, colleague, that I thought they were fantastic questions. And one of the follow-ups I hope we do between now and the next hearing, since we have the benefit of the presidents of most of the floating home, if that's the proper term, associations, I would hope that you would get cards from the BES team here and make sure that, to the extent there's a discount program, Clean River Rewards, or anything else, which, as you've heard, could offset 100% of the on-site cost of stormwater management, let's make sure that you're aware of those programs, and then if you haven't applied for them, that we help you apply for them so that you can fully mitigate the cost. So I'm just in that.
So, I guess I'm a little rusty on this stuff. It's been a while since I was the commissioner in charge of BES, but isn't the single largest component of the on-site discount disconnecting downspouts, if I recall?
That's what I thought.
I'm looking at
so how do you do that on a houseboat? Or what does that mean to disconnect your downspout on a houseboat?
So I can tell you, Commissioner, that having gone...
It sinks.
I can tell you, Commissioner, that having gone through myself the application, the I live on dry land most of the time, the gutters on my house are connected to rain gardens. So there's no stormwater leaving from my roof area. In that respect, my house is not functioning different at all from a houseboat owner. The stormwater going down my driveway is captured by the city, as I pay for that portion of it. So
if you're a floating home and you manage the runoff from your roof through an on-site garden or something like a rain garden.
Yep. As I mentioned in my definition of the two components of the charge, the main criterion is that the city is not receiving your stormwater from your property. So the on-site component has to be somehow dealt with on the property in a way that the city doesn't have to deal with it.
And maybe if I can answer the question another way, is there are multiple qualifications for the Clean River Reward Program. Downspout Disconnect is one of those components and probably one of the largest program-wide. There are other qualifying characteristics that also allow.
It sounds like every single floating home owner would qualify for this program.
Subject to review of the circumstances, under the current program, that seems to be quite likely, yes. And in fact, to my knowledge, any floating homeowner communities that have applied receive some level of that discount.
Commissioner, one of the reasons why you heard me earlier say I'm trying to separate out the industrial users from the residential users, because I think there has been a unfortunate blending and converging of the two interests. And the fact is, I think with the discount programs and other programs, we might be able to address many of the financial concerns. As you've pointed out, for the industrial user, there's different issues that we have to be concerned about in a heavily regulated river.
So, colleagues, I'm going to jump to the front of the line for one moment, because I'm going to have to leave, and I'll turn the gavel over to Commissioner Fritz in a moment. Two questions that I'd like to have answered. The question was raised about authority, fees versus taxation. I'd like to have more in-depth information on that. Somebody raised the question of, can you legally change the definition of impermeable? I found that to be an interesting question. I don't have a particular sense one way or the other on that, but I thought it was a valid question, and I'd be curious to know what the answer is with regard to that. And those are my two most pressing, and I'll get you more detailed follow-ups after that. I'm sorry, colleagues, that I have to run, but I have an engagement. I'll pass this over to Commissioner Fritz.
Commissioner Fritz.
We're just doing it this way for today.
Oh, okay.
A sponsor, so she's.
I'll give you a turn.
Yeah, it was pre-arranged. Ordinarily, it would pass to the council president, who's Commissioner Fish, but we made an arrangement since Commissioner Fish is sponsoring this and there were lots of disparate views that we'd pass it over to Commissioner Fritz. So there would be.
You can all be mad at me when I gavel it out.
Exactly.
That's
Thank
the main
you
thing.
For saying it better. Thank you.
Commissioner Sultan, did you have a question or comment?
Well, The Administrative Review Committee decision that was rendered in November, that applied only to Vigor?
That's correct.
So the floating home associations were not part of that?
They were not in that appeal.
Okay. So I guess, you know, the mayor mentioned a few minutes ago that sort of some philosophical concerns, and I guess one of the overriding philosophical concerns that I see is that you have a party that prevailed 2 months ago in a decision that's been challenged since its inception, and it seems, you know, it kind of gives resonance to all those issues about, well, you can never beat government because government will just simply change the law, change the rules to ultimately prevail. And I can't help but feeling that's a little bit what's going on here. And I think that was maybe some of Mr. Sprott's frustration, obviously, as he expressed it. So I guess that's my philosophical concern that I'm entering this next round of decision-making on is, you know, at what point, if you win, you win.
So. You know, Commissioner Saltzman, I just note that the city frequently appeals decisions that we disagree with, and you've cast probably hundreds of votes appealing decisions of the courts or administrative agencies we disagree with. I'm less concerned about what an advisory body, the ARC, renders as a decision. What my philosophical approach to this is, what's the right outcome? We have a code, we have administrative rules, we have regulatory requirements in the river. My interest is, what's the right outcome? And I think people have raised a lot of questions today, which we should ponder very carefully in striking the balance. But the city routinely updates its code when it turns out the code is no longer tailored to the current circumstances. And I think that's actually something we do regularly and without controversy. So, again, my touchstone is going to be, what's the right outcome? Commissioner Fritz.
Are you done with your questions? Okay, so I just have a few questions and comments. First of all, the title of this item is Clarify Stormwater Billing Methodology, which I would have to say for the general public would have to not think I'm going to rush down to City Hall and testify on that. That sounds fascinating. So thank you for digging into it, everybody who has, and recognizing that this is a significant issue. Secondly, for my parents in North Cherrywood Village and others who may be watching at home, they then would have realized that it is an issue about floating homes and riverside businesses. And so they may have been thinking, well, this doesn't affect me if I live in East Portland or Southwest or somewhere that's not connected to a houseboat. I think it would be very helpful at the next hearing if we had a presentation on the Clean River Rewards, because you have to apply to get this discount on your stormwater fee. I don't think everybody knows about it. It's helpful to revise it and also for all of us to understand what goes into getting those discounts. I know I live in Deep Southwest, where part of my discount is because I've got a lot of trees on my property. So not only does the rainwater not leave the not get into the river, it stays on the property and goes back up into the atmosphere. So that's a different kind of water dynamic than what we're talking about here for the river boats, the houseboats. So that, I think, would be very helpful so that we can make sure that everybody understands. It sounds like all of the houseboat communities are eligible for this 100% discount, subject to certain conditions. And if that's the case, perhaps we have less of a disagreement than might have appeared. I heard a couple of people say that the 65% off-site fee that goes into the stormwater was something that should not be assigned to ratepayers. So I think it would be helpful also to have a little tutorial on how that is set and why it is set on rates rather than general fund. Secondly, the status of the mighty rivers, the Columbia and the Willamette, in terms of stormwater conveyance, how do they fit into our system? Do they get... Excuse me. Again, in Southwest, lots of the stormwater doesn't go into sewers. It goes into creeks. And part of the reason that we pay stormwater fees is to make sure that we manage erosion in those creeks, do some habitat repair, those kinds of things. What's the status of the Willamette and the Columbia when we're talking about the citywide stormwater system? And I forgot what my third point is, which is really unfortunate. I thought it was a really good point.
First two were pretty good.
I was really motoring there, wasn't I? I'm sure it'll come back and I will ask it in the future. But I think those were the two main things. I know. I've actually written it down and circled it, so that's always handy. the definition, it was claimed that there's no definition of impervious surface in the stormwater manual. I find that hard to believe. And if not, why not?
Commissioner, I can address that quickly. And I very much appreciate Mr. Sprotts bringing that up, because we did overlook the fact that the definition in the manual is actually impervious surface, not impervious area. So we will modify the code to make sure that that word changes is taken account of.
Well, I would have to say when I ran for council in 2005 that my oldest son, who was a teenager at the time, said, "Mum, don't talk about stormwater management or impervious surface. Nobody cares." So I think we've come a long way in the last 12 years that lots of people care, as we should. So those we'll have another discussion on the 31st at 3 o'clock. Please get your questions, concerns, comments in. I hope this has clarified a little bit what we're doing. Mr. Wagner, I can see you have a question, but I'll ask you afterwards, okay, because we're done with the current testimony. Anything else, Commissioner Fisher, the sponsor?
No, only that I appreciate all that the people took the time to come out and testify. I was a little chagrined when I saw some stuff on social media that sort of impugned the process, and I've been doing this for 9 years. We don't always get it right. We're not perfect. No one up here claims any special insight. But what I have learned on this council is that when we put an item on the agenda and we say we're going to honestly engage it, listen to the public, and try to get to the right outcome, more often than not, that's what my colleagues do. And I hope that you who are here today are reassured that we're working together to try to get this right. So I appreciate the testimony and the tenor of the testimony, and as the commissioner in charge of the bureau that brought this proposal forward, we'll make sure that we follow through on all the commitments that have been memorialized by the acting president and the mayor.
Thank you, everybody, for coming.
Oh, I just wanted to say, if we could clarify for the record that this is a continuation of the hearing.
Continuation of the hearing.
Rather
for,
than a second first reading, just
right.
So it's right.
Continuation of the hearing, technicality for the 31st at 3 p.m. For those of you who found this interesting, tomorrow at 2 o'clock, we have a 5-year update on the Neighborhood Prosperity Network. So tune in again. Come on down. It's more good news.
You can reserve your existing seats for a small fee.
We are adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you all very much.
Yeah.
Good question. Thank you, Amanda.